Luke chapter 16, the first 13 verses. The context of this is chapter 15 and 16. And if you go back, you'll find that the Pharisees have been pestering Jesus because they have got it into their heads that Jesus is making it too easy for people to come into the kingdom of God. So there are two questions that play here in chapter 15 and 16. And it's, what is God like to allow the kind of people that Jesus is bringing in? And are the people that Jesus is inviting in really fit for the kingdom? If you look in chapter 15, just have a quick look. We'll not go into it. Do you see it? Stories about the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. All of these stories show that the character of God, he is the one who goes out searching for people. So we come from one story, the one of the prodigal son. And a reminder again, prodigal, a word we don't often use, means someone who spends lavishly, spendthrift. From that story of a person who finds grace in spite of the fact that they are a spendthrift and wastes all their resources, to this story we have, where we have a person about whose story is about a wasted opportunity, a wasted opportunity that is gracefully restored. So I want to suggest to you that these two stories aren't really that different. We have someone who has lost something, and we have a father figure who restores everything. So let's just look at the two stories and then move ahead. The old story of the prodigal son in verse 15, do you notice that the Pharisees are listening? Do you notice as well in this story, he's talking to his disciples, but the Pharisees are listening. We go to the prodigal story. We have a father. In this story, we have an estate owner. In the old story of the prodigal son, we have a son who loses everything. In this story, we have a manager who loses his job. In the old story, we have the spendthrift son who comes to his wit's end. In this story, we have a manager who loses his job and he is at his wit's end. He's been sacked. In the old story of the prodigal son, we have the spendthrift who finds help by throwing himself at the mercy of the father. In this story, the shrewd manager throws himself at the mercy of the estate owner. I'll explain a little bit about that. In the old story, we have the Pharisaical brother who thinks that the father has accepted the brother too readily. In this story, we have Pharisees who think that Jesus is peddling cheap grace. In the prodigal story, we have the message that reveals God's heart, that he's always searching out for people and he's very gracious. And in this story, we see that the father, the heart of God, represented in the estate owner, is one that is full of grace. In the old story, the spendthrift son discovers that the right way to use his resources is to use them according to the father's dictates when he comes back home. And in our story today, the corrupt manager also learns that the right way is to invest his resources with God's perspective in view. But let's go on. So let's look at the story. The main purpose of this story is to answer the question, how will people who have squandered their resources find restoration? The constant mantra, as I've just said, that Jesus has been hearing from the Pharisees is that the sinners must become like the Pharisees. They must become like them in order to find salvation. You can see that in chapter 14, verse 1, and you see that again in chapter 15, verse 2. 15:2 is really the trigger for the story about the lost sheep. To that, Jesus says, you don't know God. He's full of grace and mercy, and he bestows to those who throw themselves upon him grace and mercy. So we have a wealthy man and his corrupt manager. Do you see that in verse 1? Do you see that in verse 1? The corrupt manager hasn't a leg to stand on, and so he doesn't dispute this fact that he has been caught with his hand in the till. He accepts the sack. Do you see that in verse 2? He accepts it. Notice something else about the estate owner. He does not send the embezzler to jail. He accepts the situation. And I want to suggest to you that what this is really saying is that he is merciful. He's no fool, but he is merciful. He could have sent him to jail. Verse 2 says this, give an account of your management because you cannot be my manager any longer. He wants to cut his losses and by letting the manager go. The story then cuts in line verse 3 to the manager. He weighs his options. Do you see it? I'm not strong enough to dig in verse 3. I'm not strong enough to dig and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I will do when I lose my job. People will welcome me into their house. He's completely realistic about his circumstances. He faces up to his limitations. He knows he doesn't have the strength, and he's too ashamed to beg. Knowing that his employer is a merciful man and that he has nowhere else to turn for help, he knows that the only place to find mercy is back with his employer, and he turns to his master, or more accurately, he turns to the master's debtors and strikes a deal with them. Do you see that in verse 5 and 6? He says to the first one, how much do you owe my master? 800 gallons of olive oil, he says. Then the manager said to him, take your bill, sit down, make it 400. And then he comes to the second and he says, how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replies. Take your bill and write 800. But look at verse 8. Have a look at verse 8. I want to suggest to you that the estate manager, knowing the character of this rich estate owner, he throws himself at the mercy of his master. And I want to suggest to you that verse 8 tells us the master is also compassionate. Because he says, in effect, fair cop, I've been outflanked by this man. I must commend him for his ingenuity, and so I will not undo the deal he has struck with my debtors, for he has used my resources. I'll let that deal stick. He accepts the deal that the manager has struck with the debtors, and therefore he's acting out of grace. How like the father and the prodigal son, the spendthrift son, knowing that the father is compassionate, throws himself at the mercy of the father and says, take me back as one of your servants. Now, in our story, the corrupt manager does not use those words, but his actions say the same thing. All is lost. Please let me squeeze one more act of grace out of your compassionate heart and allow me to secure my immediate future using your resources. So it's not Jesus who is commending, if you look at verse 8, it's not Jesus who is commending the dishonest manager. It's the manager who does that. Jesus is saying this, when you realize that you have squandered all your resources, money, you squandered your health, you squandered your mental health, your relationships with your family, face up to it. First thing, face up to it. And think about the future. Cast yourself on God's mercy. After all, that is what we've been learning in the old chapter, the story of the prodigal son. Now, notice that there are two points of focus in this story. Look at verse 4. Do you see in verse 4? The corrupt man's focus is on using the resources to win acceptance into people's homes. Verse 4. But Jesus has a different focus. His focus is on believers using their resources, money even, for the kingdom of God. Do you see that in verse 9? I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself so that when it is gone, you'll be welcomed into, not into people's homes, but into eternal dwellings. But someone will say, Wanyeki, that sounds like you're preaching cheap grace. Well, it sounds like you're saying, you know, you can buy your way into the kingdom. Nothing could be further from the truth. Remember this, that the only way the sinner could have found grace was by throwing himself at the mercy of his employer, hoping that the estate owner would extend more grace to him. The sinning manager had nothing to contribute to this retirement plan that he has worked out. He had to fall back on his master's debtors. Do you see it? He is relying on the master, even in that very act. Happily, He finds that there is grace even for a wretch such as he. In verse 10, Jesus eliminates that any idea that we are saved by grace and then we can spend it any way we want. Because, do you see it? Jesus' point in verse 10 is this. We should use our money with an eye for the future. Now that we are in the kingdom, we use our money with an eye in the future, with an eye on eternity. And he's saying to his disciples, use your money to invest in the kingdom. And that is what we've been learning about here on Partnership Sunday, the Sunday which is just gone. Encouraging people to sign up, to be partners with this church, which demonstrate that we are investing into the future. Now, why does Jesus use money as a marker of discipleship? Because money is usually one of the last things that falls under the discipleship of Jesus Christ. Now, there's a big warning about money here. Money is a bit like fire, is it not? It's a bad master, but he's a great servant. Both fire and money are actually morally neutral. It all depends on their origin and how we use our money. This means that Christians can make use of their money as much as we, as well as we can use fire. However, both have the capacity of driving need. Both have a driving need to become masters. If you leave a fire unattended, soon it will consume everything. In the same way, money, if allowed to become a master, it can suck us into its vortex, a vortex that we can't control. On the other hand, we have God. That's what Jesus is saying, who rightly requires our service and he requires our loyalty. He is the Lord of the universe and he will not accept to be number two in our lives. He is Lord. He must take center stage in our lives. And that is why Jesus says, you cannot serve money and God at the same time. The lesson is this. God must be our master, not money. By all means, we should make money. That's not what this passage is discounting. But we do so having earned the money, always with an eye for the future, with heaven in view. Do you see that in verse 9? He says, so that when you come to heaven, you will be welcomed. And so, for example, you sign up to All Souls Partnership and you start giving money, and some of that money goes to Afghanistan to help with Christian work there, or with Aslan, or with something else, children's need. Years later, you present yourself before God, and that money which brought that person from Afghanistan to Christ, you find that person in heaven. I think verse 9 is saying you get welcomed that way. Or that child that was reached through the work that C-Zone does, who becomes a Christian, having invested in that ministry, you end up in heaven. And you find a long line of people to welcome you because you used your money wisely. I tell you, use your wealth, Jesus says, to gain friends for yourself, so that when they are gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Make money by all means, but let's do it for the kingdom.